You're listening to Dialogue Conspiracy on 24 Hours Stereo, KLRB FM in Carmel. Welcome back to part two of Dialogue Conspiracy. For those of you who have just joined us, with me is political research specialist Mae Brussel. I'm Phil Kogan, sort of asking questions. We were talking a minute ago about Bugliosi and the Manson and Sirhan cases. Dialogue Conspiracy looks at current events, past events, future events, politics in general, and the everyday events that influence politics and are influenced thereby.
Well,
May, you wanted me to mention something here about Brady Avery Legal Fund.
Yeah, last week we
Brady
asked...
Brady had a lawsuit against some of the governmental officials in Sand City.
The big city of Sand City.
And he was murdered a couple of weeks ago. And his partner... Well, let's see. Brady and his partner both were notified that they could take a, instead of a $42,000 settlement, they could accept a $3,000 settlement or go for a new trial, which is very expensive. And so I take it from your note here that there's a legal fund that's been set up for Brady Avery in his memory and his partner in order for them to pursue a new trial against Sand City. And where
would people... Why don't they mail it here to the station? Give the address, they can mail it to us here
if you'd like to mail
station.
It to the station, it will get to the proper people. Mail it to the Brady Avery Legal Fund, care of KLRB, Box 3904 in Carmel. It's the Brady Avery Legal Fund, care of KLRB FM, Box 3904 in Carmel. And we'll see that May relays it over to the Avery family and to... Brady's partner.
It would be a shame if they didn't get a chance to have a retrial on this, because they won a $42,000 suit with a jury trial and went through all of this work, and Mr. Heisler in town donated his time and carried this thing and culminated, and it seemed too good to be true that a person that had been oppressed and pushed around and put out of business by a handful of people in Sand City could go before the courts and carry it up to the higher courts and win this in front of a jury. And then it sat around for a year and no money came through, and then all of a sudden they say, well, you're going to have a retrial. Take $3,000 to have a retrial. And the energy and time spent away from their shop and everything was just overwhelming, the legal time, the physical time of going up to San Jose, the trials. And then right after they were told they couldn't receive the money that they were supposed to get from the suit, 2 weeks later, Brady was shot and murdered, and the suit is pending, and if we don't raise money, there's a certain amount of the paper book, just getting the old trial records and things. Nobody's going to make any money out of the donations. They need about $1,200 minimum to open up the trial again. So if you have money that you think you might spend on Christmas presents and you could give a little less and the thought would be as big, give the difference to the fund for Brady's family.
Another item of business before we continue on. People are always asking where they can get a copy of the Realist magazine, which contains that long, long article on the Watergate affair and Richard Nixon et al. Copies are still available at the Thunderbird bookstore in Carmel Valley.
Yeah, they're only 50 cents.
Anything in Santa Cruz.
Yeah, the bookstore in Santa Cruz, too. Because
the Bookshop Santa Cruz.
Yeah, I got letters here at the station this week, about six of them, with money and clothes. If you don't have a car and you can't get out to the Thunderbird, then write to KLRB. But if you are local people and you can get out there, go out there and buy it there.
Was it 50 cents?
50 cents.
Okay.
And then the outside, the Thunderbird told me they now have paperback editions of Jim Garrison's book, The Heritage of Stone. And before summer vacation, during the summer, we didn't talk about the books or buying books to read. A lot of the college kids were away, but I used to give titles of books each week in addition to that Robert Kennedy thing, which I mentioned today. Get The Heritage of Stone, the paperback. It's a very good book by Jim Garrison, and read what he has to say. And it's not expensive. The Thunderbird has copies. And put it in your collection of the history of the 60s and 70s, and just read it. It's more than I can do in 1 hour to even go into it. And it's a book you should own and hold and see what was Jim Garrison saying and understand how the media put him down and what he was really trying to say about this country. Now, I want to talk about...
Before you do that, yeah. I'm sorry to interrupt you. One other item of business came to mind right now, and that is the station has received, a couple letters a week, it averages, from people who want copies of the program, taped copies of the program, or transcripts. Well, to make transcripts of these programs would be an impossible task, especially since we've done almost 90 programs now, and it would be an impossible task on a weekly basis to make transcripts. There are no transcripts available. And B, to make tape copies of the program is almost impossible, because although the programs are taped and copies are made, record copies are made, there we have no facilities for high-speed duplication of mass quantities of the programs. And so it's not a simple task to simply ask for a taped copy of the program. What I might suggest is, if you think you might want a taped copy of any of the programs and you are a regular listener, I might suggest that you just hook up a tape machine to your radio, which is not difficult at all. And then if you decide after you've heard the program it's not worth saving, then you can just erase it and use it for another program or record the Beatles on it or something. But it's very simple, and if you have questions as to how you can use your radio for recording,
to make
cassettes. Ask anybody at a record or a radio TV show store, and if they can't help you, call us at KLRB and we'll help you. But, I mean, that's the way to do it.
It isn't hard to do it, and quite a few people take cassettes every week and they play them over, and we cover a lot of material usually, and, they can listen to it and look up certain points.
Find out where you made a mistake. Actually, in all the programs we've done, although we've issued many challenges, I've issued many challenges on behalf of the program, for people to dispute facts, I can't remember receiving a letter where anybody has ever said what you said was a lie
or attacked me.
Or attacked you. Got a couple of crank letters, but
which
that's
ones?
To be expected.
I don't remember.
There was a couple of crank letters from, I won't say what part of the Bay Area.
Yeah.
But I think they're from the Santa Cruz area.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You hid them from me?
No, you saw them.
Oh, I thought they were compliments.
I thought they were cranks. So
listen, considering the amount of material we cover in the names.
But I'm only a couple in over a year, well over a year that we've been doing the program. So anyway, that business aside, that's how to tape it. Please don't ask for taped copies of the program, guys. Many of you have.
The other thing, some tapes are going east now, and somebody copies them for me, and I make a cassette, and send. If you send a blank cassette and $3, for somebody to put it on there, I have a friend that will do it, but I don't ask them to do it for free because it takes a whole hour. It takes, turn a half hour and then turn it over. It takes their time. So, or $2 if you want to send a blank cassette, if it means that much and you want a copy of any show, send a blank and a couple of dollars. I'll give it to a friend to make and he'll mail it off to you. And that's fair enough. But I have tapes of the back shows, and I would like to get somebody to put up money where we could duplicate them, and send them or index them, but I haven't found any angel with money that will do it yet. If they would, it would be far out, because we've covered a lot of material. It'll be as pertinent a year from now as it was, when we said it. Now, I wanted to do a little bit about the Billy Smith, because that was on our local peninsula, and last week we talked about Brady Avery. When Billy Smith first was brought over here from Vietnam in August of 71, I got a call from the news department. Were you here then? Were you the one who was carrying the news? And you heard him, you heard Luke McKissick talk to a group of people that morning about Billy Smith and the defense of Billy Smith, and you suggested I go over and see him. He's over at that building on Broadway where the Harambe Clinic is now. And a few people that heard Luke McKissick on the peninsula that morning were upset, because they got the impression that he was going to say right or wrong, the impression they got was he's going to say that Billy Smith is guilty. Because he's going to defend him on the basis of guilt because of racism and the climate of Vietnam at the time, that under those circumstances it encourages fragging. And I got a call from two or three people that day, and about four persons came to my home, and they were really very nervous, and they had listened to Dialogue Conspiracy, and they had heard me talk about Sirhan and Luke McKissick, who was his attorney, and they said, you better go over there tonight and see what's happening. So I went to this place, and I sat there, and Luke McKissick was there, and Billy Smith's mother, and his two brothers, and his sister, and I heard him talk, and I listened to what he was saying, and because I was very concerned. The only thing I knew about Mr. McKissick was that he was the attorney. After the major case was over, the prosecution of Sirhan, he came in on the tails of the case. But when the evidence came in that Sirhan did not fire the fatal bullet or did not kill Robert Kennedy, Luke McKissick was Sirhan's attorney, and he didn't do a thing about it or have any interest in that evidence. And he denies it now, but I brought with me that evening a newspaper article that he was interviewed at the time of the new evidence came out about the second gun, and they said, well, what about this? What are you going to do for Sirhan? And Luke McKissick said, according to the LA Times, he said, even if my client didn't kill Robert Kennedy, he came with the intention of doing it. And the evidence was very heavy that Sirhan did not fire the fatal bullet, and I wondered what kind of an attorney is representing him. Well, the climate, the emotional climate, at the time that Billy Smith was brought over here, was in August of 71, and Angela Davis was arrested. You had a whole prison system with a lot of blacks and Chicanos in jail, potentially a scene that would be ripe for a riot, a revolution, preceding the 72 elections like we had in 68 when Martin Luther King was killed. And in that period, you had Angela Davis arrested, you had Juan Corona, the Soledad brothers, the Berrigan brothers, Raymond Marquez, Edward Whiteside out at Soledad, Bobby Seale, Rap Brown. You had the massacre of the Sharon Tate thing, La Bianca, the Oda family massacre in Santa Cruz, the Isla Vista riots, and you had a very volatile situation that our country was in. And all of these, I knew that all of these were planted evidence and patsies to create little Reichstag fires all along the line.
You think the Hells Angels are tied in with that?
Yes. Yeah, I've done that before. Maybe we can do a show next week because of the rest now. The Sonny Barger on trial, if I remember to do it next week.
Yes, people discovered in the buried in the farm up there.
Yeah, they call them the Manson girls. We could do that. But getting back to this thing, I went down that evening and I listened to what Mr. McKissick was saying, and I took notes. I brought them here. These are the notes I took that night. I sat in the room, and I was writing off, just everything he was saying. And when he was through talking about how he was going to defend Billy Smith, and I'll show you what he said at that time, I just said to him, how did you get in on this case? Because any person that gets close to Sirhan or James Ray or any of the alleged assassins, Arthur Bremer, have particular clearances. They just don't get in on these cases without some special way. And Billy Smith, I considered a political case, and it was very volatile. And I asked him, how'd you get in this case? And he said, what are you taking all those notes for? Why are you writing all this down, you know? And who are you? And I said, well, I'm May Brussel. And he recognized the name. I've done a lot of churning or tried to down L.A. And he said, are you May Brussel? I said, yes, and I'm watching you. I said, I study political assassinations. Any attorney related to political assassinations, I watch them. And I'm going to watch you, and I want to see what you're going to do with Billy Smith. And I asked Billy Smith's mother, where did you find out about Luke McKissick? And she passed it off to his sister, and the sister didn't want to tell me, and the brothers seemed rather hostile, and there were other people in the room, including some attorneys in town, you know, and they got very angry that I was interfering with the evening presentation, and I was very angry at what he was going to do, and I'll tell you what he was going to do. And then I'll tell you what the discussion we had in the room afterwards. Because of this volatile political situation, I was worried. So what he said then, and this is totally different than the defense of the case now, and I bring it up for this reason. What he said that evening was he was going to attack the military system, and that he would attack the jury system, whereby the all-white military jury would be prejudiced against the black. And he would attack
Okay, he did that.
Yeah, he would attack the legality of the war and the conditions of Vietnam.
Okay, the judge told him he couldn't do that.
That's right, and the psychiatric evidence. He was going into the state of mind, the racism, the relevant...
He did not do that.
That's right. What he was going to do then was to get... He said, I'll get every black writer and we'll make and psychiatrists, and we'll go in to men like Cobbs, wrote Black Rage, and he was going to get these writers and psychiatrists. I already could see the Ruby trial with streams of psychiatrists, Jack Ruby's one-minute epilepsy that he never had before or after, Sirhan's one-minute hypnosis with the mirrors in the Ambassador Hotel, the stream of psychiatrists just ends you up on death row. It doesn't convince the jury, and it has nothing pertinent to the case. And the, if you sit at Fort Ord and put the military on trial, you can't say Billy Smith, because these are military people. He said, I'm going to put the military on trial, these were his words, and we'll call attention to how the blacks are treated differently in the military. He said Billy was a high school dropout, or he was in high school and he was drafted. He didn't want the military. He was down on the military treatment. He was afraid of being killed and he didn't want to kill. And Luke said, I'm going to plan to generate a lot of publicity. Well, this is, the publicity is what wouldn't help, like Carl Chessman, Sacco Vanzetti, the Rosenbergs. I saw a pattern here that was very similar to a lot of cases I've seen. And he was going to generate publicity, and he was going to contact Nixon on the inequality, which is okay. The way Callie was treated is against Billy Smith. And he was going to bring out public sympathies to understand fragging and why you have fragging. And he said, I'll bring every major black writer, and we'll bring authors on attitudes generated by war. And he was going to ask the jury to see the conditions of war and what kind of a war, what the war brings on, what kind of problems. Well, we talked about that, and after he was through, we went outside, and the family was kept apart from where I was. And I said to him, look, in the course of the evening, he mentioned something about the fragmentation bomb and that it was going to be tested in Japan, that was the only place it could test it. And I said, look, the prosecution can't be the only place. The defense and the prosecution can't both be testing the same weapon and instrument, and the handling of the evidence by the military is like the military handling the evidence on the John Kennedy assassination. I said, if you would stick, from what he said that evening, the emphasis that he was going to put was on these five things, the jury system, the legality of the war, the conditions of Vietnam, and the psychiatric evidence, those four things. And I spoke to him, and I was really mad, and I said, when are these cases going to stick to the evidence in the case? Because so many people are innocent, and these are political patsies. They're political patsies singled out, and when you stick to the actual witnesses that were there, not hearsay or third person, and you stick to the evidence of the case, the chances are that a patsy could be cleared. Because when you're doing this now, like the Corona thing, each day it's unfolding clearer and clearer. The bank notes and everything. How much could be planted on Juan Corona? You say, I'll be surprised if he gets it. Well, I just said to him that I am interested to see how attorneys work that take these political cases and how they avoid the actual evidence and get into these theoretical things about the psychology, accepting the psychology that he did the fragging because he is oppressed. Well, I never did see Mr. McKissick again. He knows that I have all this research on the Robert Kennedy thing. If I had anything he didn't have, he never asked to see me. He was on the peninsula for months, and he had no interest at all in having any contact with me, which is all right. And I stayed away from the Billy Smith trial. I didn't go one day. And I did express to people in L.A., mutual friends, researchers that he is close with, and people that he knows, my feelings about what was going to happen up here. And everything was reversed, and the trial took on an entirely different tone. You were there every day, Phil. And the defense wasn't anything like this.
No, it wasn't.
Huh?
It wasn't anything like
that. It wasn't anything like
that. What he said that night.
That's right. And I'm glad he wasn't, and I'm glad that I had that small confrontation, because I think that if somebody had come up to the lawyers of these other cases and challenged them very early in the game about what they were doing, or blew their cover, or exposed the two ways to defend a person who is a political patsy, those patsies would get off. So the trial ended up well, and I stayed away from it, but I feel that it was starting way off in August. It was starting bad. See, and that was the time, that was just 2 weeks before George Jackson was killed in the San Quentin Six. And there was a very vulnerable time between the black-white relationships, which Washington cooled off and things, you know, each one, the cases went their natural course with good lawyers who were dedicated, and Angela Davis sticking to the evidence, and with the Soledad brothers, the trial there, the men sticking with the evidence and the witness, we saw a whole new change in a chance to get these political patsies off and out, because that's what they were.
Yes, now after we've talked about Billy Smith for about 5 or 10 minutes, we should explain who he is for those who don't know. Billy Smith is a Army private who was arrested in Vietnam at Benoit Army Base on March 15th, 1971 for the fragging deaths, fragmentation grenade deaths of two officers and the injuring of a third officer while they were asleep in their barracks. And the prosecution case that was put forth by the Army prosecutors was that Billy Smith hated his commanding officer and first sergeant, and although he didn't kill them, he meant to kill them. The Army said that he knew that they were sleeping, or believed they were sleeping, in the room where the two other officers were killed. And their key evidence against Billy Smith was a grenade pin taken from Smith's pocket, which, on the basis of scientific experiments conducted by an Army tool marks expert, the Army claimed matched a grenade pin. The grenade pin taken from Smith matched a grenade spoon found outside the room where the grenade exploded. So that is Billy Smith in way of an explanation. Smith was acquitted of all the charges except one charge of kicking a military policeman in the groin and spitting upon him when he was arrested.
So. Well, you know, if evidence were planted on you, you'd kick him too. I think considering that he was found innocent of all charges, the spitting was justified. You know, imagine being trapped. If he didn't have people there working for him, you know, dedicating the hours, which they did, to this thing, he easily could be in jail the rest of his life. And I'm hoping that many cases up at San Quentin now that I think about will be overturned as these lawyers move along and stick just with the evidence of the case. See, all of the research into the political assassinations that I've done starts with the ballistic evidence and the fingerprints and the actual physical evidence of the case. And then you branch out to broader theories or speculations, because when the physical evidence doesn't match, you begin to say, well, who planted it? And that becomes hypothetical. Now, the letter that I got, this was a long time off, and I'm really sorry. It's one that we said, and we say it all the time, if you have anything on the assassinations that you want answered, I will answer those. This is a common letter that I get from people. They ask me a question. They think, many people think, that John Kennedy was no different than the power structure of the establishment. And this letter is from somebody in Monterey who reads The Realist and is listening to KLRB, who, under his way of thinking, considered John Kennedy not as a martyr who stood out against an invisible government, but as somebody who was part of the military-industrial complex. And he said to me, the man who wrote this said, people picture Kennedy as a martyr who attempted courageously to counteract the invisible government. But this assumption is false, because John Kennedy, for all of his liberal rhetoric, always acted in such a way that I suspect the Pentagon, the CIA, and big business would be happy to approve of. And it goes, this person said, he set up the CIA operation that engineered the Bay of Pigs. Well, that's false. He inherited the planning of the Bay of Pigs and found out just at the time the operation was taking place that it was done behind his back, and they told him it was already an operation in effect when he took the presidency. He didn't set up the clandestine operation of the Bay of Pigs or engineer it at all. This person said he pronounced a demagogic diatribe for refugees in Miami. He didn't do that. Then it goes on, he was close to blowing up the world with a nuclear weapons. And this was not true either. And he blockaded Cuba. These things were not important in the general picture of things. The question is also was asked me, he did everything in his power to cater to the people who are accused of gunning him down, and what motive would they have in killing him? Well, just briefly, we have about 4 minutes left, or three. For one thing, the Pentagon Papers, if you read them very carefully, don't show a continuation of policy between Johnson and Kennedy. They show that Kennedy would have had all troops out by 1964. And to have a few people over there, even espionage, gathering information, isn't wrong considering how large Asia is. But to have all troops out by 64 is very clear in the Pentagon Papers. And he didn't approve of the policy of Diem. and the brutalization and the exploitation of the people. He didn't feel that a fascist dictator is better than a communist. He didn't support Diem, and he did not want troops in there. He was pulling them out, and the escalation right after his death is very clear in the Pentagon Papers, starting in November 24th with Lyndon Johnson. Right away, the nuclear test ban treaty was something that the powers that be did not appreciate, and he had price items of the steel. There's a whole book out on why this, the U.S. Steel was in on killing Kennedy. Robert Kennedy was the first person who was going out after organized crime, the syndicate, not for votes, but he sincerely wanted to break that up as the attorney general. It's the first time in all the years that J. Edgar Hoover had used people like Lansky as agents of the FBI, and now he, Robert Kennedy, was going into the syndicate and mafia as the attorney general. He was heavy for the oil depletion allowance, which the Texans and the large rich oil people want to hold on to, and he was very open about that, Kennedy was. And the civil rights bill, we're going backwards from where he was. He fought hard for a civil rights bill, and there are a lot of Southerners and racist people that did not appreciate the position he took or his brother took in sending troops down there to open up the college. In Latin America, he gave speeches about dividing the wealth and participating in the sharing of the resources. And
so that's your answer to the question.
And the minute he was assassinated, the Dominican Republic, the military was recognized. We just don't have much time. That's eight things or nine reasons that he didn't go along with them.
And so CJ's question for Monterey is, what possible motive in light of the above items cited in his letter could have initiated a conspiracy to plot his death?
And I'm saying there were a lot of reasons. When you talk about civil rights, you're talking about the whole labor market in this country and nuclear weapons and armament budgets. And he was not going, he was the son of a rich man, but he was not a spoiled Cold War strategist.
Well, I'm glad we got to answer that letter from September 9th.
And if any of you have letters, that, problems, or questions that you want me to answer on any of the assassinations.
Just say on there, answer this one quickly. Because we're about, there's so many letters coming in, I think we're about 2-3 months behind.
But we will
try and catch up. A lot of them are answered personally, I know.
I think you should write, and we will answer them, because I promise I'll get around to it.
Now, May's going to take her stack of mail home and continue working to catch up, and working on the material for next week's program. We'll see you next Saturday.
This has been Dialogue Conspiracy, a public affairs presentation of KLRB News. If you have questions that you want answered on future programs, or any comments, write Dialogue Conspiracy, KLRB, Box 3904.